You're listening to Red Eye on Vancouver Cooperative Radio, CFRO at 100.5 FM.
Civilizations across the globe and spanning centuries have cherished their collections of books as a sign of their accomplishments. Yet there also are times and places when collections of books have been the targets of destruction. The ancient world's great library of Alexandria was targeted for destruction 3 times. But it is not only literary and historical books that are targets for destruction. Indeed, today in Canada, records of scientific research seem to be at serious risk of destruction. And I'm joined this morning from Winnipeg by Dr. Burton Ailes, a research scientist who is focused on the study of freshwater ecosystems from Ontario and the Great Lakes to the Arctic. Dr. Ailes also is a former senior director of the Department of Fisheries and Oceans for this same area, a job that he now has retired from. Thanks, Burton, for taking time this morning to speak with us on Co-op Radio.
Well, thanks very much, Mordecai. I'm very pleased to be here, and I'm glad that you're interested in it.
I'm wondering if you could give us a sense of the importance of freshwater research in Canada.
Well, that's a big task, but sure. Canada probably has about 30% of the world's surface freshwater, and annually about 9 to 10% of the freshwater flow off the land into the water. 9 to 10% of the world's freshwater flow comes from Canada. Canada has I think 4 or 5 of the 12 largest lakes in the world and some of the largest rivers. Now, to tell you a little bit about the responsibilities, under the Constitution, the Canadian Constitution, the federal government has overall responsibility for freshwater, for fisheries, both inland and in the marine system. And the Federal Fisheries Act is the most powerful piece of legislation that Canada has for protecting freshwaters. Or maybe has, because there has been some changes in the Fisheries Act in the last few years. Now, over the decades, Canada built up a really in what was arguably one of the best research communities for both marine and freshwater in the world. And I should explain that in the oceans, Canada manages the day-to-day fisheries. So your people on the West Coast are familiar with the Department of Fisheries operations there. In freshwater, inland waters in the Prairie Provinces and in Ontario and Quebec and in the north, in the inland waters, those fisheries are managed on a day-to-day basis by the provinces. And but the federal government still has maintained a research capacity. And the region that I was involved with here is Winnipeg, is the Freshwater Institute, was also the regional headquarters for Central and Arctic region, which covers the Great Lakes, the Prairies, and the Arctic. So this facility here did both freshwater and Arctic science. And it was one of about a dozen science facilities across the country. There you have Pacific Biological Station and the Institute of Ocean Science, Pacific Biological Station at Nanaimo, and the Institute of Ocean Science, the two major ones on the West Coast. The research that came from Canada, both here and in Ontario, is used now all over the world. Some of the original work on acid rain was done by Canada and by the Institute here in Winnipeg. Work on phosphates and detergents and from sewage was carried out here at the Freshwater Institute and the Experimental Lakes Area facility that's now being closed by the federal government. That told us what we had to do to stop the loss of fresh water because of pollution. Those are just 2 examples of the kinds of research that have been done here and elsewhere in the country on fresh water.
I know that you wrote a letter about a year and a half ago, along with several other people very expert in the freshwater research, concerned about the government's curtailment of the ELA program. Your letter didn't deal directly in any length with the question of the research that are in the libraries and their protection. Do you think, in retrospect, that this concern you expressed then really does foreshadow what has now exploded into a major issue of public policy?
Yes, it does. You may be aware that the federal government has ended the fisheries contaminants program all across the country, not just in freshwater, but in the ocean systems as well. So those programs have ended or are ending. There are programs at the Institute of Ocean Science, programs here, there's programs in Burlington, Ontario, and on the East Coast. And the government has decided that that's no longer a priority. They are providing a separate source of funding, but that funding will likely go to universities. And the ELA closure was part of that decision. At the same time they announced, that was in 2012, they announced the closure of a lot of facilities. They did announce that the libraries were going to close, but the significance of that was not really made known to people until the last few months. And now the libraries in the Department of Fisheries and Oceans and in other places, other federal departments, are closing or have closed. And what the government has done for the fisheries library is closed seven of those libraries and will now maintain libraries in Institute of Ocean Science in Sydney and at the Institute in Dartmouth, Nova Scotia, and another small library, I think, in Ottawa. But that meant that libraries at institutes in St. John's, Newfoundland, in Montjoly, Quebec, which was the only French library, in fisheries library in the country, libraries at the Freshwater Institute in Winnipeg, the library at Pacific Biological Station, I believe, St. Andrews, New Brunswick, Moncton, have all been closed or are in the process of closing. And the government has said that the material will still be available, but it will be now held in those other two libraries that are still retained.
Well, what is the rationale for this quite massive change of the numbers of libraries and I assume also the numbers of documents and manuscripts that are no longer so available?
Well, the rationale that the government has given, or the Department of Fisheries has given, is first of all, budgets. They're going through a downsizing, and they say that they will save $440,000 by closing these libraries out of a total reduction in budgets of for the Department of Fisheries and Oceans and Coast Guard of about $80 million. They also say that everything is going to be digitized in the future. Everybody uses digital material, and they say that all of the government department, all of the government documents are available digitally. And then they say that nobody from outside uses the library anyway, and there's only 10 or 12 people a year would visit the libraries. Those I believe, are the three reasons that they give, I don't know about the budget one. I have no direct knowledge, but I don't think the other two stand up at all. The idea that nobody, 10 to 12 people only per year, use the government fisheries library is not my experience at all. I myself, as an part-time environmental consultant or fisheries consultant, have used the Freshwater Institute library 10 to 12 times a year myself. When I was the research director of science there, I found that the library was always busy, and the institute is on the University of Manitoba campus. There were students there, fishery students, biological students, there were consultants, there were faculty members, as well as government scientists, all using that library. So that may be some experience with one of the government libraries somewhere, but that's certainly not the case, the general case. But that's almost irrelevant because the libraries are not for the general public. They're for the government staff, the ones that are supposed to be doing the research and carrying out the environmental assessments. They're the ones that would use the library, and you know, a lot of that's gone to them. And that's the other comment was that digitally, the things are now more available digitally. Well, the government had, the Department of Fisheries had something like 600,000 publications, of which their own publications, about 30,000 are available online, and some of the others will be available online. But as you know, Mordecai, that the world did not start in the year 2000 when everything started to become available more easily digitally. And there are literally thousands of books in those libraries that are not digitized, and they're never going to be digitized, and they're not going to be available to the people that use them on a regular basis. And as well as the regular books, which were published and available in libraries, there was also a huge volume of what we call gray literature. It's literature that's not formally published, but is available. And the best example would be environmental studies that were carried out for a particular environmental project, whether from river reservoirs for hydro development purposes, or oil sands development, or pipeline linear construction, highway construction. All of those environmental studies are called, that are done to help make a decision, are called gray literature, and they're were in those libraries. They're not digitized. They're unlikely to be digitized, and sending them to a different library long ways away from the people that might use them is going to make them not available.
When we look at what's happening to our environment, the ability to maintain research which documents changes over time is really essential. And once that chain of time monitoring is broken, the research effectiveness also is broken.
Absolutely. The one really good example I have is I'm sure your listeners are all aware of the proposed Mackenzie gas pipeline, and that was it was approved a couple of years ago, but after a long environmental review period of. But you may not be aware that there was an earlier proposal for a pipeline up the Mackenzie or down the Mackenzie down south from across Alaska, across the Yukon North Slope, and then to Alberta. And there was an extensive environmental review done in the 1970s. They looked at every single stream and looked at the fish species were in the stream and the water chemistry in those streams, amongst other environmental things. And when the Mackenzie Gas Project in the 2000s was reviewed, people had that 30-year-old data to go back to and say, okay, what's changed since then? Has there been a significant change as a result of natural variability or a result of climate change or industrial development? So we had a much better idea of what would be the possibility of negative environmental effects with this new project, because we had a baseline that was 30 years old. Now, that material's gone. I've used it myself for review, and there was a whole shelf at the Freshwater Institute. Now, some of it may have gone to the Institute of Ocean Science, but I know that some of it's in the offices of individual scientists who realized it was important and did not want to lose it. But it's gone to everybody else.
for people who would like to state their opposition to this destruction of the library collections. I'll give a website. It's called evidencefordemocracy.ca/libraries. Thank you very much for joining us today.
Well, thank you, Mordecai. I really appreciate it. And I should, that website also has a access, allows you to access a number of newspapers around the world that have already reported on this, so people might be interested.
Excellent. I'm sure they will.
Thank you.
Take care.
Thanks for your interest. Bye-bye.
I've been speaking with Dr. Burton Ailes in Winnipeg, a research scientist who is focused on the study of freshwater ecosystems from Ontario and the Great Lakes to the Arctic.